Woohoo!
Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
And I'm straight beaming over here on this Tuesday, and I'm feeling minty fresh.
Okay, first, I'm not sure which one to touch first.
Yeah.
Let's start with the minty fresh. Where does that come from?
Do what I've realized is that my best brain space is when my teeth are freshly brushed.
Oh, I like it.
I know. So the last like 25 podcasts, like 2 minutes before recording, I'm like, I must rush downstairs and brush these teeth.
Well, our faces are about 3 inches apart.
Yeah.
So for those that don't know, we have one mic, one face is at either end. Megan is giving me minty fresh amazingness, and I'm giving her skunk mouth. It's pretty bad.
I don't know. I don't smell it. You're also wearing our singlet for this recording.
Yeah. The swap singlet?
I feel like you, I don't know, your breath is emanating good vibes, as is your singlet.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know. My breath is definitely emanating some notes of meals I've had in the last 24 hours. I'm a little bit of a mess right now.
AKA good vibes. I feel like whenever there's like peanut butter or chocolate or like hints of athletic greens in there, I'm like, I'm down for it.
Okay, no, that's not the way it is with me right now, because I am recovering from the McDowell Mountain 50 miler on Saturday. And the main thing that happened yesterday, so Sunday, we're recording on Monday, was so much food went down this gullet, and weird food. I don't understand post-race like tastes, but it varies a lot. I was craving vinegar at one point. I had a burger at 1:30 a.m. after the race. So you're getting a lot of smells, Megan, and I'm very sorry. This is not a good thing.
Okay, well, first of all, high five. You freaking crushed the race. It was so amazing. But I loved your post-race, because we went out for burgers and you were like so excited to go out for burgers post-race. We get there and you eat 4 bites, and then you're like, actually, I don't know. And you went around and like ate one thing off of all of our plates. You really needed like tapas or something post-race.
Yeah, I ate Leo's meatball kids menu thing. Because for some reason that tasted good. It is so strange how the like physiology of taste works and psychology of taste.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the race, I did classic food doping in SWAT parlance, where I tried to have 400 to 450 calories per hour. I was able to succeed for the most part, though I faded a little bit, as we'll talk about. And as a result, though, everything just went to kind of hell over the next 24 hours as it relates to my taste buds. I don't understand it. Now I'm back to normal. Everything tastes good. But it was a little touch and go there for a second.
Maybe you should have brought a toothbrush and just like reset between each different like meal cuisine you were eating. Pull a Courtney to Walter. And yeah, maybe your brain vibes would have been higher too.
It brings us back to minty fresh.
It does bring us back.
I had an opportunity.
Back to minty fresh. But this is why I'm beaming, is because it was such an amazing weekend. David, you threw down and like you crushed the food doping. You crushed the race. You got a course record. It was, I don't know, it was just like one of the best weekends. And getting to see you have that like celebration and like just to celebrate the fitness that you've had, it was so cool.
Well, I regret to inform you, it wasn't a course record.
Oh my God, you're right. Actually, that's true.
It was the second fastest time.
It was a course record in my heart and my love.
Yeah,
that's true. As you were running, actually, I was believing in it so hard, but you were a few minutes off.
Yeah, but that being said, I won and I'll take it. And also, what really matters is, do I get course records in your heart?
Always, every performance.
Strava segments in your large intestine.
Exactly. Even a DNF, I'm like, course record in my heart. I believe so deeply.
It was such a fun weekend. So let's hop right into the episode, because we're going to get into tons of training lessons, ideas from this weekend, fun stories, things like that. So here's a roadmap for this week. Lessons from the McDowell Mountain 50 miler, which was so fun. And we actually got to share it together, the last 8 miles of that course, which is awesome. Talk about pacing. Shoe choice for the race, which is a little different. 2 studies on intervals, just building off some training theory things. Then have an amazing section on news and fun things this week, including stories from the California International Marathon on Sunday. Some more UTMB issues. We wish we didn't have to talk about this, but I think we do. Follow up on ketones, our discussion last week. NCAA champion training. Some details have come out about both Parker Valby and Graham Blanks. First look at shoes from the running event, and hot takes.
Okay, this week was so hot in running.
Like, it was there so was hot.
So much going on, and I feel like I'm just going to like keep beaming the rest of the week, because not only was it a great race weekend for you, but like so many of our athletes, so many other athletes out there, and I found myself waking up last night at midnight still beaming, and I was like, girl, cool it. Like, midnight is not the time to keep beaming.
Yeah. Okay, before we get to McDowell, actually, let's have a little insert, a minty fresh insert of what I saw you do yesterday on the plane as we're flying back from McDowell.
Oh, I'm scared. I have no idea where you're going.
Well, I want to give everyone a true window into what it's like to understand Megan as a coach, which will, I think, illuminate the amount that you care and the energy you bring to this podcast. So we're on the plane. This is during CIM, the marathon. Megan has a number of athletes in it, including two women that were going for OTQ, so under 237, which is around 6 minutes per mile, a little faster. And so when she's doing it, there's nowhere to really watch the race. So she signs up for internet and turns on the CIM tracker. And you had your athletes there, and you know, you're watching it. And at first, you know, you would click on it maybe every minute or so, which I thought was a little bit compulsive. I was getting worried about your brain state at that stage.
Well, this is kind of like a window into my life. You know, when you're sitting next to someone on the plane and you're like, they fully see like how many times you like peruse the internet in different directions. That might be my baseline. It's just like toggling back and forth between a bunch of things. And I got a little embarrassed.
It's often on planes, you know, someone will be watching a show and I'm like, are they watching pornography on this plane? Right? And that often happens to me. Like, I'll be watching something I think is innocuous, and all of a sudden there's like a hardcore sex scene in this Disney movie. I'm like, what the hell? Things have really changed since I was a kid. Okay, but the reason I'm bringing it up is it got to mile 20. And as everybody knows, after mile 20 is when shit gets real in a marathon. And you just keep it on the tracking page. And the tracking page has a little icon that just goes. And every, you know, minute or a little less than a minute, it'll go to the next tenth of a mile. You kept it on the tracking page and you stared at it like you had a severe mental disorder. You just literally stared at it every single time it got to a new tenth of a mile. I would just see you under your breath go, yes, yes. And I was like, something's wrong with my wife.
Okay, it got intense. It's kind of like how I do treadmill workouts, actually, where you're just like watching things like incrementally like gain and grow. But it was nerve-wracking because it's like you never know what happens in that final like 6 miles of the race. But you know what? They incrementally did it. And it was so cool. It was like, but actually what happened was, so the plane landed and they were at mile 24 and they both had like a minute buffer on the OTQ, but I was like, the internet went out and I was so sad in my tracking game of like watching 0.1 miles tick by just like crashed.
Yeah, and then as soon as we get off, you update it and you start screaming. So you're bringing a lot of great energy. Your athletes, Peyton Thomas was sixth overall in 235, big breakthrough for her. And then Abby McNulty, and I believe it was her debut marathon.
Debut marathon, eighth in 236 nose. Oh, it was so cool.
That is a wonderful coaching accomplishment. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, swap is more of like a, we have more trail runners in general, and these both of these athletes are trail runners as well.
Well, they're both trail runners, and they both had short builds into this marathon. I actually went back and looked at their training this morning, and both kind of decided in like the September, October timeframe to do CIM, which is a very short marathon build. And my hot take, this was amazing, and like, my gosh, it was so cool to see what they did. My hot take is they can both go sub 230.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. And my hot take is that you're the best coach in the world and also deranged as fuck.
I think you got a little bit worried about like my mental health and psyche.
The weird part to me was that little under the breath, the little every tenth of a mile. Yes. Yeah. You're like, they haven't stopped yet. Yes.
Well, also I was believing hard.
Yeah, you were. You were believing so hard.
I was believing so hard. I was like, I knew both of them were going to get it from the outset. And you were kind of being like Mr. Shithead over there. Maybe it was because you were like post ultra.
No, I didn't want you to get your hopes up too high.
Yeah. You're like, 20 is where shit's going to happen, Megan. It's going to get real. Well,
I believed in them too.
Keep believing. Keep believing, David.
I believed in them too. I just didn't want you to get to the point that if they did have those issues that a lot of people have at the end of marathons, that like, I don't know, you go into a wave of severe depression.
I wouldn't. You know what? They would have a course record in my heart.
Okay.
That's reserved for you and also for my athletes too. Yeah.
They would have an OTQ in their your gallbladder.
Oh, exactly. In my liver.
And building off that, best coach in the world, because you know, have coached me so well for McDowell Mountain. And when I got to that start line, I was so confident. And during the race, I felt so good the whole time. And so thank you for that. Not only that, you coached 4 of the 6 people on the podium of the 50 miles, which meant that you earned people $4,000 worth of prize money through coaching. So congrats. That was really cool to be on the podium. And they gave us champagne at the end of the race. And I got to spray it on your athletes, on the swap athletes, which is a really cool experience.
Actually, can we describe, well, first of all, thank you. Like the athletes I coach, it means so much. And they're wildly talented too. Like
Megan, I get it. Stop. Our podcast listeners get it. I know you hate this type of thing, but I need to point it out because I think sometimes you're so humble. And it's a thing with society in general that sometimes women are not celebrated at the tops of their fields like they should be. And the world needs to be on notice. Megan Roach is the coach. You're such a beast.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. Well, it's actually like, I get so much joy from coaching, and it's why it is truly why I'm like perpetually beaming this week. Is it's so cool to see athletes get to do this, and to also understand like these athletes, it has not been an easy ride for anyone on the podium or anyone OTQing. And I think it's just inspiring to see the behind the scenes nature that doesn't always get shared on social media. And as a coach, you're kind of like more privy to that.
Yeah. Well, maybe what you can coach me for next time is champagne spraying.
Okay. I was actually going to comment on that because we went back and like watched the videos as you're about to post of the champagne spraying.
Our Viapa running has a video of it, so you can see this in action.
So everyone is like has these glorious sprays, and then yours is delayed like 3 seconds, and then it just kind of does this little
So I was worried because there's a story from cycling. Binyam Girmay, an incredible cyclist from Eritrea, one of the first main African champions who's come over to Europe and dominated. There's this story of him being on a podium and getting a champagne bottle, popping the cork and hitting him in the eye. And he missed a few weeks or even longer. It was very close to losing his vision altogether. So my worry wasn't so much of hitting myself. It was firing the cork out and hitting someone in the crowd and like ending someone's vision.
Okay. Well, the way you did it, you did not risk anyone's bodily purposes. No. Not even your own. It was this so little bad. Just like a putter of champagne. It was cute.
Oh, no, Megan. It was really sad. It was one of those moments that I was like, damn, do I need like Cialis for my champagne function? It was so bad. But you were, you know, instrumental in that. And it was just very cool to get to share the experience together. So maybe we do a few race week reflections that'll be kind of interesting to people that have followed the journey, then get into some like reflections from the race before getting into all the other great topics we have.
Let's do that. Also because race week was kind of like a vacation. Actually, yeah. You're both very busy. It was kind of a working vacation. But the first thing is I love Arizona.
Yes.
And it was fun. I mean, I feel like before you raced, we had already won because the trip itself was so fun. Like we'd had these amazing memories. We got a cool shakeout in the day before. We'd been to like, we had like two burgers by that point. And I don't know. I just think it's fun that whenever you're going for a race, like make it a cool vacation.
Yeah. And get a good Airbnb. So we did based on ratings. Ratings at Airbnb are the way to go. Don't worry about price or anything like that. If you get something that has 5 stars or very close to it, it's almost always incredible. So we open up this place. It has the wildest decor. On the walls are like photos of Marilyn Monroe and then art of like various numbers of boobs.
There was boobs everywhere.
Boobs as far as the eye can see.
Okay, so it was an interesting Airbnb. There was red couches and then just boobs on. We should have counted actually. We forgot to do that.
Yeah, it reminds me of.
I mean, I estimate at least 6 pictures of open boobs.
Yeah, it's like when Simba is lifted up in The Lion King. It's like one day all of these boobs will be yours, Simba. That's what we did with Leo. And our bed was built down into the ground as if it must have had a waterbed in it at some point. Now it wasn't a waterbed, but it was just such a cool experience. And one of the things I reflected on is that the Airbnb process and where you stay and all that can be part of the adventure so that even if you get to the race and you get sick and you can't do it or something, it's still a cool experience.
Well, you made a comment as we were driving to do our shakeout the day before the race that choosing Airbnbs is kind of like choosing trails and finding your own new adventure. And I love that. Yeah,
it was so fun. And we got to share it with Leo. My mom came, who was so helpful throughout the process. And Leo had a breakthrough week as well, because all of a sudden he started screaming one word, which was very motivating for me, which was da-da. Over and over and over when I was in the room.
I mean, he's probably said it at least 300 times since he learned it. And I think it's because you give him such strong affirmations when he says it that he's just overjoyed to do it. And
I don't think so.
I think it's officially, he said, you have a high standard for words.
Yeah.
He said a bunch of words, but I feel like this is the first word where he says it and there's a motivation behind why he's saying it. Like he wants something from you. So I think it's probably officially his first word.
But the thing that always is shocking to me with this is as he had this breakthrough with language, he also had a major sleep progression. So we've talked some cocky shit on this podcast about babies and sleep. And we just want to say last week was not pleasant with that. So it's a reminder that you don't need to sleep that much on race week. But I thought it was interesting that the language development was so closely tied to the sleep progression.
Oh, it makes sense to me. I mean, if you think about it, like high anxiety, like is tied to intelligence and verbal function. And I don't know, it was both interesting and scary to me to see this kind of happen side by side and in parallel. And it just kind of gave me a broader reflection.
Well, when you combine that with seeing you on the plane, just whispering, yes, under your breath, I'm like, Leo is going to be a weirdo and I'm very pumped for it. Then the other really exciting thing that we had on race week that got us very motivated was Spotify Wrapped came out, which as it relates to my musical tastes, is a little bit scary. This is when Spotify summarizes what your favorite music is of the year.
What was your top artist?
Oh, Megan, I don't share this with the world. This is between you, me, and Jesus.
And the boobs at the Airbnb. You can tell them. Okay.
So my actual top artist was The Lonely Island.
That's hilarious.
The comedy group, which if you haven't listened to The Lonely Island, do it. It's amazing. They have a song that's called, I got that diaper money. I got that diaper money. And that's like my anthem.
Were you in the top 0.05% of Lonely Island? Because the way, I mean, I feel like Lonely Island, it's very funny. It's an amazing listening experience.
Yeah.
But it's the sort of thing that I listen to once and I'm like, okay, I get the picture. This is hilarious. It's not really music that I want to run to or live to or experience multiple times. times.
I want to experience it clearly a level of times that has Spotify worried about me. Yeah. To the point that Spotify gave me a video of the Lonely Island thanking me for my service.
Wow.
Which I think they probably did for some bands. But also it was a joke, of course, because Lonely Island's like, what the fuck is your problem musically? So the thing is, I listen to it. It's like my comfort song, music. Mm-hmm. So like when I'm having a tough run, sometimes I'll just turn it on and it makes me feel a little bit happier. I'm like that with comedy specials too, like Shang Wing's, you know, Juicy Special or whatever it's called on Netflix. I've watched 6 times. For some reason, the comedy can do that for me. So I don't feel too ashamed about it, but I do feel somewhat ashamed.
Well, I kind of understand it from a primal level. Like Leo watches Moana 50 times and for whatever reason, it always comforts him. But Leo watching Moana 50 times is topical because in Spotify now they give you a city where you most strongly associate with. And I think all of them are college towns or have some sort of like college town association. And yours was Madison, Wisconsin.
Which I'm happy with.
That's
Madison,
cool.
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
They're always amazing. Heck yes, Madison. To our listeners in Wisconsin, we vibe.
I would say it's kind of like alt-pop, alt-hip-hop, like some cool genres in there. Meanwhile, this girl, I got Provo, Utah, which means my listening habits align with like having 14 children.
That might be it. We don't know, though. We're assuming.
I don't know. My second, this is embarrassing.
Yeah.
My second like top genre was country music.
Oh my God, Megan.
I know. What's wrong with me?
We never listen to country music together. So how are you accumulating these stats?
I think I like running to it. Like, I mean, we've talked about on here that like AI could generate country music pretty darn easily.
Yeah.
But it's like comforting.
We're talking about bro country here. As always, there's amazing country artists.
Yes. Oh yeah. Stuff. There's like amazing old school country. I feel like bro country has navigated into a terrain that's like very... Like you could just AI generate it. SNL does some great takes on it.
Yeah. And there was actually an amazing thing I saw recently of AI generated Luke Bryan, where the final lyric of it resonated with me so much because it was beer, 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 and I love my pride. And not only was it really on point, but it was also a really good song that I could totally drink to.
See, this is why I run to it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm probably like running to AI-generated songs. And this is so good.
I like it too.
I do like it.
See? I just don't really... The problem is sometimes it infuriates me. So it's a mix between like self-loathing and deep, deep vibing.
Yeah. I was going to say, it is deep vibing. So I was going to say, it kind of taps into like my primal neural circuitry.
Yeah.
Where I just feel good when I'm running listening to it.
We might have to edit that part of the podcast out.
I know, right?
But also on Spotify Rap, they gave podcast stats. And so we got tagged by so many listeners. And we just wanted to say we love you and thank you. Some of it was a little bit shocking. We calculated based on triangulating where people were in top 1%.
Because they give you the number of minutes. So it says like, congratulations, you've listened to 11,000 minutes of the SWAP podcast.
That was the highest number we saw. Yes. 11,884 minutes of SWAP.
Which I believe is almost all of our episodes ever within 1 year.
And that person also said they listened to all the Patreon episodes, which aren't counted in that. So if you sign up for Patreon, you get 78 bonus episodes that I don't think go through Spotify. So that was a little bit scary, but
it was scary too, because you know what? I think we both have like decent levels of self-confidence. I don't know if I'd want to spend 11,000 minutes with me.
I asked what it does to a brain and I got a lot of great responses back. And a lot of people said very complimentary things. Some said a little bit touch and go things, but I'll take it. But it would take 7,000 minutes to get into the top few percent because people were posting 4,000 minutes and they weren't even top 10% sometimes. I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so cool. And it is such an honor to be on this journey with people.
Oh, it's such an honor. Also, your mom, who is a diehard listener, like she listens every Tuesday. She sends us takes.
Yeah.
She thinks about it. She was only in the top 5%. I think she was a little sad by that.
She's not as big of a fan of us as we are of Luke Bryan, AI generated. So that was amazing. And as always, to support the podcast, go give it 5 stars wherever you listen. Click follow, whether it's Spotify or Apple or anything like that. And subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/swap, SWAP, bonus episodes every single week. If you want to get another 5,000 minutes of podcasting, that's where to go. We just answer listener questions there. It is a little bit different vibe. We've gotten a lot of great feedback from it recently.
Actually, we did a podcast recording the day before you raced, and I felt like that was a fun vibe, partially because we were a little bit like excited, delirious, hyped up on travel. And I don't know, you just get different. I feel like whatever our vibe is that week, we kind of roll with it.
Yeah, a lot of people said that I was very confident in that recording.
You were confident. Actually, it kind of scared me a little bit.
It did? Why did it scare you?
I mean, because ultras are, it's a mixed bag of shit.
Like, oh yeah, and I dealt with shit, yeah.
You can sprain your ankle, you can cramp, all of those things in which you experienced and which you've experienced in the past before. And, you know, it's like, I had utmost confidence in you, but like, you know, it's just, ultras are rolling a bag of dice.
Okay, this is a good transition into McDowell because I kind of, in retrospect, do love that swag because that is not maybe a baseline setting for me as a human.
Is it a character that you're playing or is that has become... like reality, or is that what you actually think?
Well, I think character is an active habit.
Yes. Yeah.
So this has tried to become a habit in sports, especially, but in everything over time.
Because I remember when you played football that you had to, in order to like go hit people hard, which is not your baseline setting, you had to kind of like, I don't know if whether it was contextualize or take on a character or do something different to get yourself in that place.
I had to be like the water boy. If you remember that movie with Adam Sandler, where he's like, don't talk bad things about my mama. And then he would hit people really hard. Yeah. That's basically what I had to do. I had to act like I was tough. And I wasn't just, you know, a sensitive boy that wanted to listen to, you know, my pop punk music on the back of the bus. So, you know, that thing, I think, is something that's important for all athletes. It's just embody that. Even if things haven't gone great, they're going to go great next time. Yeah. And that's kind of where I was coming from, because my two ultras this year that were longer, Canyon's 100K, yeah, I finished fifth, but it was a bad day. And we talked about that on an episode where you can get a lot of, you know, nitty gritty lessons.
A lot of details about stomach contents on that one.
And other things. Yes, you know what I mean? It was an up and down day. And then Grindstone 100K, where for all intents and purposes, I DNF'd at mile 11 after my ankle. And so it's like, where does that confidence come from? If not faking it a little bit, because my evidence so far is not that things are going to go great. And you played a huge part in that, because, you know, you give me the freedom to fail and to be feel okay about it. So, you know, I hit the start line of this race confident, but also, you know, understanding what I was getting into. There was $1,500 to the winner of this race. I hadn't looked at the start list. I had no idea who was going to show up. So I was just like, no matter who shows up, I have to be ready, and I have to be ready for a lot of different types of race trajectories. And that openness to the experience, I think for me, requires confidence. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I get so bogged down in anxiety. Anxiety about my, you know, how I'm going to feel, cramps, wrong turns, fueling, bathroom breaks, everything, that it just doesn't become fun.
Yeah. And I think it was, I mean, I was curious, like, where, I think a lot of that confidence comes from your training.
Yeah.
And you've put down the training and you know it's there. And I think it's neat that you have the training to back that up. But then you also have this like inertia in the process of thinking that allows you to support like the strong training that you've done.
Yeah. You know, and it's always hard because it's easy to backfill rationales onto these things. And I hope what I demonstrate in this is that even when things don't go great, like a Grindstone, I had the same mindset.
Yes,
like,
yes.
I was still trying to do it. And, you know, that's what I want everyone that we coach to do too, is like, you know, wear your emotions on your sleeve, but try to turn it all towards this like point of you are your best day. Mm-hmm. You know what your best day is. And even if you don't show it, you are still your best day. And I mean, that's a point about fitness generally, is that like whatever your absolute peak performance ever is, that is what you are. Your middle of the road performance, like that's subject to a million other things. You can't fake fitness. And so, you know, I came in with that confidence, and you know, if this race had gone really poorly, I think I would have still brought it away from it.
And that's how I frame actually a lot of race conversations with athletes, is like framing to them where their best day is. And like, yes, that's not always going to happen. And I have to be realistic in the conversations with them. Because if I tell them all the time, like, you're going to smash this out of the water, and which I sometimes do, but I often also temper that with like, yeah, ultra running is tough. Like random shit can happen. And I want you to keep believing even if it doesn't. But a lot of stuff did happen for you. Like you had to deal with the elements, the variables. Like, can you walk us through your race of kind of some of the different struggles you had and some of the learning points out there?
Okay. I don't want to go through the whole race recap, but I will point out a few pieces of struggle that I had.
Okay, this is what I make you do over dinner, though. So as we were like, you were sitting there picking out your hamburger post-race, I was like, I want to know everything. Tell me all the details.
And so we'll work in physiology in this, because I think all of this is instructive to anyone who's done ultras, and it doesn't come easily, right? Like, that's just the way it is. Any race, really. So, you know, the race went out pretty hot. Like, we were well under course record pace for a while, and I was trying to defer to other people. But early on, I sprained my ankle again. And I was so like, fuck, this is it. This is that moment.
Like 2.5 miles you mean, by early on. That's early.
And everybody saw it. And, you know, I think enough people knew about my experience that they were just like, that sucks for you. And then athletes immediately came by me and started pushing. And I was like, oh man, this is not going to be good.
It's like the pro peloton in UCI in cycling, when an athlete goes down and they just like start hammering, start attacking. And I feel like, honestly, it was kind of a smart move on their part.
Yeah. So I just tried to settle in, and eventually it kind of went away. And, you know, I think rolling with the punches there is good. But then the biggest piece of adversity was, for some reason, at mile 24 or so, my hamstrings in particular started cramping violently, like really seizing up, to the point that I had to stop a couple times and then really slow down, especially on transitions from down to up or up to down. And I don't understand why, because, you know, cramps are always a problem for me, but they started, and everyone would say, oh, it's fitness. Oh, it's pacing. Oh, it's all this. but then they kind of just went away. And it wasn't with a huge intervention. I did make an intervention that I can tell you're about to give me a little bit of grief for. But the idea being that, like, so much of it's random and you're just dealing with your physiology. Like, I have a physiology that has always cramped. I cramped in football. I have cramped in my first 5 mile runs. I do it no matter what my training is, what background is.
And sometimes you cramp when you see boobs.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually a good point. Yeah. I have cramped in intimate moments.
Yeah. You're like, my toe.
My toe. Why is my toe doing this?
My pinky toe.
Yeah. I feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my toe. So, you know, that happened. And like at the time I was running with Gary Messina, who's a great athlete, and he just had to went away. And like at that point I just took so many electrolyte pills to try to manage that. And they went away within a few, you know, miles after that. But I don't think that that was it either. I think it was just kind of the body sometimes needs to work through this adversity.
Well, you also told me something fascinating that I think kind of explains a little bit of possibly a physiological mechanism behind cramps, is that they also went away when you sprained your ankle a second time.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the adrenaline rush, like when you sprain your ankle, it's kind of like this full scale adrenaline rush. It hurts, you feel nauseous, all these things. And some of the cramp interventions involve like puckering, like, you know, taking in something sour or taking in pickles, or like, I wonder if the adrenaline response of like puckering or spraining your ankle has some role in like the neurologic mechanisms behind cramping.
Yeah. So maybe next time I should just run into a big rock.
Yeah. Just impale yourself with a tree.
Good advice. But it points out that every athlete, if you're out there and you deal with this, some are going to say they have never, these are people that have never dealt with cramps. They're going to say, it's your training. You need to improve strength work or whatever. It's like, I do all those things. I think about it so much. I've dialed in my nutrition and it still happens. And so managed that, was able to start working back. And, you know, the rest of the race was essentially able to manage when I had to like reduce, you know, some of my intake because of stomach issues and all of that. So there was some adversity, but I think that's the magic of the sport, is that you're out there and on the fly, you just kind of have to troubleshoot. And I love it. Like the big conclusion I have from this year is that ultras are so fun, like so much more fun to me than short races, even though short races are where I think my best performances lie.
Also, probably because you got way more wrecked from that half marathon you did a couple of weeks ago, where we were talking about the fact that you were like lactic till 7 p.m.
Yeah.
And you were like kind of like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So I picked you up at mile 42 to pace you.
Yes, most incredible experience I've ever had.
Okay, we've had a lot of dates. I would actually love, we should like do a calculation of how many like quote-unquote dates we've had.
Yeah.
And we call a lot of things dates, like eating breakfast together is a date.
It's how really about fun. Podcasts? Does that count?
Totally a date. Okay, yeah, we've had a lot of them.
So this is number 183 at
this
the
is
very
number least. Number 183. But it was maybe the best date of our lives.
It was the most, you were just so incredible out there. Like I picked you up, and the 2 miles after I picked you up, we gained 2 minutes on second place in retrospect, looking at the Strava. And that's just super cool, that like the power of that. And that's one of the big takeaways I have, is making these community events where you have loved ones, friends, people that care about you outside of yourself can be so helpful, because often it's really easy to compromise in your own head. But when you have someone that loves you or cares about you or is interested and invested, it makes all the difference.
It was flow state out there. And like my fitness right now isn't the highest. Like I'm coming off my heart stuff.
Yeah.
I calculated, I looked on Strava before pacing you. I've done 6 outdoor runs before stepping up to pace you. And you run fast at a 50 miler. And so I was heading in a little bit nervous. And so I treated this like a race. Like I was doing a warm up. I was doing like my activation. I was having those like nervous pre-race poops. But literally running with you, I couldn't feel pain. Yeah. And I don't know, it's just a fascinating concept of like having flow state together and having that partnership, and also getting to follow. You have like great lines on trails. And so it was cool. And I want to do more races where I pace you or you pace me.
You're just so fast.
When you
joked about getting dropped, I was like, well, you do not understand. You are the type of person, you know, that same yes, under your breath that I talked about earlier. You apply that when a bib is on and shit goes down. It's training doesn't describe anything of what you actually do in practice. I mean, it's one of the big differences between us as athletes, is you're a stone cold killer. And I'm the kid at the back of the bus that listens to pop punk music staring out the window. There's a difference. And it's wild what you are. You're a headbanger that goes into the mosh pit and decks people.
Well, it was cool because, I mean, I felt like I was in a race environment. And typically, yes, I am kind of a stone cold killer. But here I was in a race environment. And like my prime goal was to uplift you. So I was like in this like kind of stone cold killer, like quasi mindset. And then a mindset of like, woohoo and huzzah and you're crushing it. And like, I don't know. We just had really cool conversation too this last 8 miles.
I was hoping you would say to me at some point, go faster, you bitch. Yeah. I actually probably would have responded to that pretty well coming from you. I was in a good mood, wasn't I?
You were in a great mood.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were also burping a ton too.
So I was.
Every once in a while you would slow down to burp, which yeah. I thought was an interesting tactic. Was that like working for you?
Yeah. It's like the opposite of afterburners, you know?
Yeah.
It's like facing forward. So it's yeah. like just kind of like one of the space landers that yeah. just uses the air to change their inertia. That's what I was doing with burping. No. So I slowed down when I burped so I didn't like have something more come up, and it would just be a few steps, right? That it would be an almost imperceptible slowdown. It's just something, a little thing I learned out there on that 50-mile course.
Yeah, I think you learned that from Clara Gallagher, actually. Yeah. She shared that on our podcast. But you did have afterburners, too. And so I feel like the two made up for each other. You know, you would, like, speed up a little bit with the afterburners, yeah. slow down a little bit with the burners coming out the front.
Neutral thrust.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so a few more takeaways before we get into all the other great things we're going to talk about. First, this is a lesson for everybody. My new thing is pre-race burgers. I had a bacon cheeseburger the night before the race and I felt great. My energy was awesome and a bunch of sweet potato fries.
Can we give a rewind though to, okay, so you had a pre-race burger 2 nights before the race.
Thursday, yeah.
The night before the race yeah. and the night of the race.
Uh-huh.
And I respect that game.
Half pound burgers, by the way.
Oh, they were delicious.
All American Sports Grill in Fountainheads, Arizona. One of the best places we've ever been. The vibes were stellar.
Oh, it was great. And I was carb smashing like I was racing with you too. So I had three burgers as well.
Yeah, yeah, you
did. It was a very fun experience.
Actually, I didn't want to order the burger at the third dinner after the race. You were like, David, you're ordering this burger to say that you had 3 days of burgers in a row, to say it was a burger weekend. I'm like, okay, coach, I'll do it. But that's something out there for everyone that's always thinking about, what should I do? I think there might be something about that, that feeling of just being totally satisfied. Mm-hmm. That can happen after that I woke up on race morning just feeling fantastic in a way that when I do a ton of pasta or whatever, I often don't. I feel weighed down or whatever. So totally recommend it, giving it a try. Like try it before your long run. Or, you know, if you're a vegetarian athlete, the burger equivalent. So whatever that is for you that also doesn't have a ton of fiber. Limit the vegetables.
Yeah, it's a bunch of, we actually had a vegetarian versus omnivore meal comparison on the podcast in terms of protein synthesis last week.
Yeah.
And I described the vegetarian meal as like bear vomit. And you yeah. just crush bear vomit and put it into a burger.
That being said, we uplift
all vegetarian sources.
We got one piece of feedback about that.
What'd they say?
We got some very positive feedback
yes.
because a lot of people resonate with that experience.
Oh yeah, we're just saying if you're a vegetarian athlete, like think about protein sources yeah. and a lot of that is like protein powder based.
And you probably yes. need a little bit more because synthesis yeah. might be lower. We got one person in particular saying that they don't think we're giving a good message when we do that, but we understand those vibes and those feelings.
We uplift all bear vomit.
Megan, you're not doing us any favors.
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to smooth it out. So
usually,
we get that.
Usually that's your job.
I know. I'm like trying to get on that person's Spotify rap for 2024, like slipping in those DMs and you're like, nope, we're going to ruin that relationship. But no, we uplift everything. Number two, granny gear climbing really paid off. There was one climb in this race that was 40% grade at times on a concrete road.
Okay, that's a little bananas.
It was wild.
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it so much
yeah.
because of the granny gear climbing. You know, I do all this treadmill uphill climbing, the types of things you give me as doubles. And I was just like, oh, this is no different than every single treadmill climb I've done. It's like, I don't even have to push. I just have to jog. And, you know, you need to hike in these things often. But if you're able to run just a few more steps, it adds up. And almost all of my gap happened on the steep climbs in this race, which is so different than I would have thought I'd be when I was younger, when I didn't think I was a great climber relative to other athletes. It's, you know, this type of climbing approach, focusing on a little bit, and then things like mountain legs, that strength routine really made a difference.
And it's fun for you because I felt like you were climbing better than your competitors at times. And so when I was pacing you, first of all, I was serving as a sentinel. So I would like look back and be like, there's no one there.
Yeah, yeah,
there's
yeah,
no
yeah.
one there. And like somehow didn't royally boot my ankle in the process.
I know. I was so amazed.
I probably looked behind like 65 times.
You were like an eagle. You know how eagles can see really far? I think they're the ones with really good vision. Maybe not. But you were just like, I'm scanning the horizon. Call.
Where are they?
Yeah, yeah.
But I got so excited for every uphill because you are smashing the uphills. And I think yeah. it's cool. Like if you've built that uphill fitness, it's a fun place to be in terms of competitive mindset of like,
yeah.
I am putting time on my competitors. And I don't know. I think you were in that spot on uphills and it's a cool place to be.
And then final little reflection is on fueling. Like the amount that it makes a difference is just massive. Like early on in the race, I was running with a group of five behind them and I was just monitoring fueling habits. And I saw that two of the athletes just were already ruining their race, whether they realized it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm saying this because like if they listen, like I want to give them this information on like food doping.
Yeah.
Because it's just so clear. It's like, okay, we're pushing right now. At times it was like 6 minute gap, great mm-hmm. adjusted pace. It's like your heart rate's high enough at that point that you're burning through your glycogen. And even for me, I was in the mid 160s heart rate in the beginnings of a 50 mile. I'm like, fuck, I need to fuel this like it's my job because otherwise I'm going to bonk. And so I was trying to take in 400 to 450 calories per hour. And these liquid gels and hydrogels make that possible. So get on board if you already haven't with these new gel sources that make high fueling something that is feasible without, you know, having the front afterburners just like, haven't come out.
Well, I was impressed with the amount that you took. And I was also impressed with the fact that you like totally... I feel like you educated airport security on these gels.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
you
that.
You brought so many gels through airport security, yeah. and they were kind of like, what is this guy doing? What is happening? They almost didn't let you through with all of them.
Yeah, they started confiscating them, and I just begged. I was like, I need my precision.
You went so nice, and you explained like the science of precision and the hydrogel. You were like straight giving our discount code out there. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. And eventually someone came along that knew what it was and said, let them through, and it was great. But you know what they did confiscate?
Oh, I know what they compensated. So I'm standing there, like, yeah. you know how they have like the conveyor belt of stuff coming through, and I see your book bag, and then following your book bag, it's just this like giant red bottle of lubricant.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, I was like, what is happening right now? But then it gets worse
yeah.
because there's like a whole crowd of like 40 people. It was a very crowded airport security line. And I don't know why, but the guy turns to me and he holds it up in front of everyone. And he was like, ma'am, is this yours? And I'm like, why me?
Yeah, yeah, why you?
Maybe I was holding a baby. So he's yeah. like, feasibly, you've had sex at least once. But I was just like, I'm being targeted right now. But you know what I said?
What?
No. Which, I mean, theoretically, it's like 50% mine, but we never got it back.
Yeah, it was fire and ice.
Yeah.
As every podcast listener knows, it's not just for intimate times when I'm going to cramp.
Oh, it's the best for chafing.
It's also for race times when I'm also going to cramp because I like to use it on my sensitive areas instead of something like squirrel's nut butter because it feels so tingly in the morning. It's like you put it on at 6 a.m. before your race. You can't help but laugh a little and it does the job.
It totally works. And I don't know what got into me. I should have just been like, yes,
yeah.
and owned it and been like, this is mine. But I couldn't bring myself to do it in the moment, which like, yeah. I mean, we talk about on the podcast and this goes out to many, many, many thousands of people. But
yeah.
in front of like 45 strangers or something.
It's okay, Megan. We could have stopped at like a CVS or something.
That's true. We didn't.
We didn't. So I was freeballing it out there. No lubricant at all. And did great.
And taking lots of gels because those got through.
Yes. And then final little reflection actually is the shoes I ran in. So I have in the past run in the Tectons, which we've talked about, the carbon shoe from Hoka. I switched to the Ultrafly, the Nike Ultrafly for this race.
Literally on the fly. Because on the shakeout the day before, you stopped like 30 seconds into the run and tied your shoes twice. And I was like, what's going on? And you're like, oh, Megan, I've never worn these before on trails. And I was like, what are you doing?
I'd worn them on roads, but it's been snowy here. So I haven't gotten a chance to wear them on trails. We got sent a pair. And
from Drew Holman. Good vibes.
Nike special pair. And they were wonderful. Literally, I didn't take off my shoes until we got all the way back to the Boob B&B.
Oh, I like that.
Because they were just so comfortable on my feet. Like they're much softer. They're a little heavier. They're about an ounce heavier per shoe for me because I measured them on the kitchen scale. But just so good and comfortable. And I can't wait to see what Nike does in this field. You know, we've talked about the big trend we see coming in trails is the super shoe revolution that we've seen at like CIM and places like that. Once it's really nailed in, it's going to be wild. So Ultrafly is theoretically a super shoe. It's getting there, but it's still heavy. You know, wait till Nike comes out with future versions of these and then other companies have to catch up. Hoka has the Tecton X3 coming out, which we're going to talk about later, that has the soft PIBA foam as well. And I think we're going to see an arms race that blows the trail world wide open.
Which is exciting to me because I only have like 3 pairs left of Speedo Evos. And so as you looked beautiful, like you were dancing over rocks out there. The trail was like, actually had a number of just like random rocks.
Throughout, on the part we ran.
On the part that
other
we ran.
Were non-technical.
Yeah. And you looked beautiful on the technical stuff. And it made me excited because I was like, I need something to fill the Speedo Evo void.
Yeah.
And I think the Ultraflies might be it.
Yeah. So, yeah. you know. Does Nike need our marketing help? No.
That's
Do we
true.
Feel a little bad about mentioning it? Yes. But we want to be honest with people because yeah. I think that shoe made a difference for me. At the end of the race, my legs were not sore, even though I had this adversity out there. And I think I owe a lot of that to the shoes and a lot of that to you and a lot of that to Precision, which I had like so many gels out there. And if you want to try Precision gels to get in on this, go to the Precision website and use code SWAP, S-W-A-P. That code you, or the what you can write into the address bar is PFANDH.com. Check out there, use code SWAP.
You crushed that.
I did crush it.
Yeah. I was even waiting for like the ampersand versus spelling out the and you nailed it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Do you want to get into the interval studies to talk about training theory or straight into the news and fun things?
Definitely into the news and fun things.
Okay, let's do it.
Why would we ever skip and like avoid news and fun things first?
Well, we would get to news and fun things eventually.
I guess sexy science is fun things.
Yes.
Let's do news and fun things and then loop back to the science. Because you know what? This weekend, like I feel like there just was a lot of running happening. Yeah. And as we head into the holidays, we'll have a lot more sexy science ahead because like events and running stuff will start to slow down.
Definitely. So let's talk about CIM, the marathon that was this week. We talked about, you know, your athletes that excelled there and ran, you know, sixth and eighth place as trail runners. Just incredible. I wanted to ask you, put you on the spot, and say, were there any big principles of training theory that you applied for these athletes that you think made a difference?
I think the first principle is that talent is a motherfucker. They are, as I said, like my hot take is they are both sub 230 marathoners.
I get it. They're incredible.
With like an appropriate
Payne and Abby.
Yes, we
Abby
love
McNulty
you.
Abby McNulty and Payne Thomas, you're the best. But let's get into some nitty-gritty training.
My second training principle is I really leaned into a lot of like a much heavier threshold focus for athletes training for road marathons.
Yeah.
So stepping up and doing things like 12 miles at marathon effort, doing some nice beefy, like
beefy long tempos,
beefy tempo based workouts, and then layering in a lot of short strides, like 8x30 second strides, 10x30 second strides to keep speed up and keep the ceiling high while making sure that we're like focusing on threshold. And so I've been a lot less scared to give these big tempo efforts.
Why would you have been scared before?
I mean, as an athlete, like 12 miles, at marathon effort, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Especially here, Peyton Thomas lives in Boulder. That's on at altitude, on hilly gravel roads. And, you know, it's not always easy, but I think it's necessary.
Yeah. And I mean, I totally get it. It's also injury risk. And so
exactly.
As a coach,
you're
a little hesitant. And I've seen that too. You know, a lot of it for me in being really confident at giving this to everybody, not just like the top professional athletes that are going for, you know, 230 marathon times for women or, you know, 210 for men, is seeing Emma Bates's training on Strava.
Yeah,
so Emma Bates, you know, one of America's best runners, what she thrives on here in Boulder are these extensively long tempo runs over hilly roads. And knowing what she's doing out there and seeing her in action really was underscored for me what you read about from people like Renato Canova and things like that. It's like, as much as these workouts can be daunting, it is essential. From specificity of marathon training to the metabolic demands of, you know, having really compressed velocity at aerobic threshold and velocity at lactate threshold. And I've also reflected on, I think this applies for trail racing too. So while I was out there in the 50 mile, there were so many times where I just settled in to that kind of quick, steady running pace. And so for a marathon, it's obviously faster. But when you're talking about 50 miles, no matter what, you know, race you're doing, unless you're doing straight up and down mountains, probably also need to be comfortable running kind of fast for kind of a long time in your long runs.
I love that. And it can be hard and challenging, but I like the point too, that this is not just for 210, 230 marathoners. Like I coach 4 hour and 5 hour and 6 hour marathoners much the same way too. And it looks a bit different in terms of like mileage and structure, but largely the training principles are the same. And I've seen a lot of success too, like with those types of athletes.
Yeah. So was there any other training takeaway that you have from it?
Yeah. I think the final thing is that it's just consistency and, you know, keeping it simple. And I think the complexity is in the simplicity and the sexiness is in the simplicity.
I love that.
And I think both athletes understood that and were great to roll with that. And so they did classic swap stuff, you know, rest day on Monday, strides Tuesday, workout Wednesday, and then a focused long run.
Yeah.
And we just stayed healthy, kept it consistent, really fueled well in training. And I think the athlete belief in the fact of like, okay, this works is also integral in the process
Definitely,
too.
Yeah.
And I really loved how they bought into the idea of like, let's just stay consistent, let's keep it simple, and have faith and trust in the process.
Yeah, I love that. You don't need miracles.
No, exactly. Yeah. Especially when you have that level of talent. But I think even beyond that, I think the like buy-in to like the daily process and the fact of like it's a consistent grind helps a ton.
Well, I think we can all do that as athletes or people in anything we care about is falling into these insecurity wormholes.
Yes,
where, you know, you think to gain you know, PRs over what you've ever done before, to improve off of already working hard, you need to do something wild. And the answer is usually just keep stacking the bricks. Same with running, same with podcasting and like our experience on here.
You know,
for a while, the podcast didn't go out to that many people in retrospect, but we just kept stacking bricks and stacking bricks. And then we see Spotify Wrapped now, and it's overwhelmingly awesome. Like the number of people who had Swap as their top podcast was so many thousands. And that's just people that have it as their very top podcast. Like the one that they listen to more than any other is just very cool.
And it's daunting to think about that. And I think both Abby and Peyton would have been thrilled, honestly, if they went out, like, especially Abby, it was her marathon debut.
Yeah.
If she went out and ran a strong race and didn't get the OTQ. And I think both of them didn't have the OTQ as this like big anxiety provoking, like result at the end of the tunnel. They were thinking about it. It was like, okay, let's get faster each day. Let's commit to this process. And it was so cool.
So cool. Okay. Just a couple more stories from this. One is CJ Albertson, who won for men. He's always done pretty wild training. He's had a lot of haters online. But the funniest thing ever happened. So he runs the marathon and then does some of the most epic troll shit I've ever seen. So runs the marathon, runs sub 5 minute pace, wins. That day at 4:30, does an 8 mile run while pushing a stroller.
While pushing a stroller.
At 7:30 pace.
It's the part that really gets me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, why?
And he said, starting the Olympic trials marathon training now. Wow, that is hilarious.
I wonder, so we're recording on a Monday. I wonder if he ran today.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely not. Definitely not something that we uplift.
It's the opposite of the consistency approach. Yes. But it is funny. And I do like funny because he's doing that. I mean, you know, obviously he has an interesting approach to training. It shows that a lot of different things can work. He notoriously does very long tempos a lot. She think he ran the Fresno marathon in like 2:11 as a training race.
That's
or something
pretty wild. Would you classify this as like it's kind of like beyond Norwegian training in terms of
how would is it a double threshold?
Yeah I know, but how would you even classify it? Well, both this training day of doing a hard marathon and then doing a double, but then also like his general training like principles.
Okay, so the marathon and then a double, that's just trolling.
Oh yeah.
Like there's no chance he's even thinking about training doing that. Yeah. I have never met him, don't know him personally at all, but I bet he's a very funny guy. And at a certain point you learn to respect it, even if you don't necessarily agree with it. Epic. The general training approach, I would say classic, you know, Canova style, where there's these long tempos, you know, on a base of speed, very high mileage, a lot of doubles, you know, classic marathon training. He works his ass off. And, you know, even though it wouldn't be necessarily our approach, I think once you're starting to push some of the limits of human performance, you can get creative. And especially for someone like this that responds really well to training. So
also, I think some people like creativity is what makes them get out the door.
Yeah.
And I think to some extent too, like, you know, if he's doing a run double with a stroller, like clearly there's some extent of his like brain and motivation and drive that loves this, like being different and being creative. Yeah. And I think tap into that too, as long as it's not fucking with your long-term health.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I love about training theory is that you can have people doing such wildly disparate things and both getting incredible results. Mm-hmm. And the disparate nature of it is the clue to learn. So even though CJ's approach with the double after the marathon wouldn't be what we do, if he goes and like wins at the trials or something, we have to think about everything someone like that does and incorporate it into our scientific understanding of training theory and conceptual models, because we can't just say, oh, that person's an outlier when everyone is kind of an outlier. Like, we need to understand how it fits in. And so CJ, thank you for showing us a new way of thinking about things. Okay. One more story on this is there were videos at the finish, and I don't know if you saw this one, but I wanted to tell you about it. The clock is counting down to OTQ. That's what CIM is known for. And so for women, it's approaching 2:37, 2:36, 58, 2:59, and then it passed the barrier. And then Tammy Say finished 4 seconds slower, 2:37.04. One of the more heartbreaking things I've ever seen. But her chip time was 4 seconds off.
Oh my gosh.
So that afternoon it came back with OTQ 2:37 on the freaking nose. How cool is that?
Can you imagine how great that feels when you finish a race? Oh, that has to be so cool.
That is so awesome.
Also the final, so the qualifying window is officially closed. Yeah. So it's kind of an epic way to go out with like the last qualifier.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, this reminds me a lot. So the Western States Lottery was happening while racing McDowell 50. And I was hoping you could get in so that when I started pacing you, I'd be like, guess what? But actually, I don't know, at mile 42 of a race, I don't know how good that would sound.
Yeah. Yeah. The lottery is always interesting. In fact, I saw a video at McDowell 50. There was a racer that was doing the 50K.
Yeah.
And, you know, they know him well in this world. We have his name written down somewhere here, but we'll get to him later. And he crosses the finish line and they say, you know, great job. And guess what? You're going somewhere next June. And he just starts screaming with joy. And that was one of the cooler moments I've seen in a while.
His celebration was wild.
You saw it in person, right?
I did. No, I think I was pacing you when it happened. Your mom saw it in person and she relayed the story. Yes,
It's just how messed up my brain is that I'm confusing my mom and you.
That is a little scary.
Maybe there's some Freudian stuff there. Okay, that was it from CIM. Lots more great stories there, but we weren't going to dig in too deep. Next one is an interesting question from a podcast listener. And it is this. Have you heard that UTMB fired Corinne Malcolm from UTMB coverage. So Corinne is someone that we know very well, and she's been the voice of many of these races. You know her in her, I always call it the Corinne Malcolm ASMR hour, where it's just this very satisfying voice. She'll talk for 12 hours and keep you interested the whole time.
And she knows so much about trail running, the people, yeah. like science. Like, I feel like her expertise is wide, like very wide and vast. And I think it's a great part of what she does. But she's also a podcast listener. So
yes.
Hi, Corinne.
We love you, Corinne.
Yes.
And it's to finish, this listener, I think, that asked the question shows how much people support Corinne. WTF, do you think this will actually deter elite athletes from UTMB races and the big UTMB race itself? I feel like they are doubling down on behavior we shouldn't agree with and without really explaining themselves. Does their PR machine suck, or are they seriously that clueless? Or are they just counting on being able to ride out the news cycle?
Well, I love that you left out the word asshole from this.
I did, yeah.
Your kind, yeah.
Well, so I also know that some of the people at UTMB listen. I've gotten feedback about that. But we haven't talked to them personally yet.
Yes, yeah,
and
exactly.
I want to actually, because the Whistler thing, I think we could write off. We talked about that a while. Mm-hmm. I think it resonated with people as some, you know, perhaps misunderstanding of the community here and why people would be angry and how it doesn't matter on the timelines. The point isn't that. The point is much broader about the community and what matters in the sport, values and things like that. This to me is a little different, because if the rationale is what is public, where Corinne has publicly stated her criticisms of UTMB when it comes to things like Gary, like, you know, female athletes. Corinne is an advocate for athletes.
And she's made a lot of change in the trail world, and both at UTMB and across like local races and how we conceptualize and think about the world of trail running.
And she has a great podcast called Trail Society. If you're not subscribed to Trail Society, go to it and click follow. Give them love. They do great work. It's her, Keely Henninger, and Hillary Allen, three people that are leaders in the sport.
But also, I think this is kind of a boneheaded move by UTMB. Yeah. So one, it's like, okay, this is weird. This is concerning. But also from a business perspective, does it seem a little bit boneheaded to you? Because like, if you're firing someone who is outspoken and who is a leader in the trail community, isn't that going to make them more outspoken?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I think it's not a smart move on their part.
So I love that point.
Yes.
But to take it a slightly different way is, you know, yeah, I think they can ride out that type of news cycle. You know, especially UTMB, they're like, we've been criticized before. You know, this big race conglomerate, like, we'll be fine.
Also, this is North American criticism. And we talked about before, like, is this...
Corinne goes a little farther than that.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I think, yes, Europeans might not understand the race scene here quite as well. Everyone loves Corinne.
Oh, everyone.
I don't think there's anyone. Yeah. I've never heard anyone say any bad things, especially about announcing. Like, you know, she's objectively great at that. As a huge sports fan, she's doing the impossible out there.
Also, she's out there sometimes for like 24 hours straight. She's doing her own ultra announcing. And I'm like, someone, please bring her a cheeseburger.
Yeah, but so the wild thing to me is that having someone like Corinne, understanding that she has these misgivings about some of the actions of UTMB, and then standing by UTMB to do the announcing, to me, is like, okay, I can feel better about our support of UTMB long-term, you know, and like liking what they're doing, because Corinne clearly is criticizing something that she also respects and loves.
Yes, because she's there sitting there doing it.
And that's the definition of constructive criticism. It's like, if someone criticizes you and hates you, fuck them, get rid of them.
Yes.
But if someone criticizes you because they actually appreciate you, that's a good thing. Like, this is often stated with like American patriotism. It's like, you, when you love America, you should feel ready to criticize decisions that America makes. Like, we are the most patriotic people. Like, we love this country. We went to Arizona. We're like, we want to be here. Even as we say, like, some of the things that are happening, like, you know, the Supreme Court decision in Dobbs, are some of the more disgusting, you know, human rights violations we've ever seen. But we still love our country so much, and we'll do anything for it. Similarly, Corinne being there, I think, meant a lot. And, you know, she wrote a beautiful post on Instagram about this, where she essentially ended it with, "Does it sting? You bet. Did I cry so many wasted tears over this? You better believe it. Am I going to be quiet anytime soon? Absolutely not."
Which I love.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope this lights a fire under Corinne. And I hope that fire under Corinne lights a fire under a lot of other people too.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think Corinne has had a fire under her for a while. And
oh yeah, it's her natural life force in a way that like is great. Yeah.
And it's called being a journalist.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
That's the point. It's like, if you have sycophants that are, you know, backing you up, that doesn't mean shit. You want people that will come up and criticize you from a place of love. And what it reminds me of so much, and is, you know, in the sports announcer realm, I grew up as a massive Baltimore Orioles fan, the baseball team. And they had this announcer whose voice is the voice of my childhood, John Miller. You probably know his voice if you've ever watched ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. Amazing announcer. Seems like a really open, kind person. And Peter Angelos, who was the owner of the Orioles, and notoriously prickly and kind of like a stingy asshole, to use that word, fired John Miller for doing criticism of the team on the broadcast. And it's like, that is not the point of an announcer, to be a sycophant. Mm-hmm, the point of an announcer is to be honest and open. And so that people are listening to what they're watching these things with a full picture of, you know, the entire array of experience that means this sporting event. And Corinne did that so well for UTMB. I think she lifted them up. It makes me sad. And I mean, we'll know more soon. I think I need to talk to people at UTMB to understand if maybe there's some rationale that I'm missing. But it's disappointing. I love Corinne, and I think everyone else does too.
Well, let's support and uplift Corinne, and support and uplift local races too. Yeah. Like, you did the McDowell Mountain 50-mile race this weekend, and Aravaipa puts on great races.
So good.
Also, it's refreshing because I feel like now at so many UTMB races or like UTMB-sponsored races, you have to wear a freaking backpack like you're going to fifth grade with all the required gear. And it's nice to be sometimes at races like Aravaipa where there's like minimal gear requirements.
There was zero required gear.
It's chill. You can just like pick up your pacer. And I don't know, I feel like from like experience perspective, I like it a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, I want to leave room open for this because again, we're so desperately trying to be like, hey, UTMB, like we want to.
Oh, you have cool races.
And we also want to be in their good graces because like there's an urge in me to be a sycophant, as weird as that is.
Well, you want to be in everyone's good graces.
I do. I want to be in everyone, but especially for our athletes and, you know, our own experiences, like UTMB is clearly going to be a power player in this field. But please, guys, just in women and everything, please, please, please think about why this is bad.
Yeah.
And we stand with Corinne, and we'll be excited to see what Corinne suggests. And much like Gary, you know, I think these figures will be made leaders in the sport, which they already were. But I think it's going to be even more powerful in the future. Okay, next up, this is another interesting story. This is not from running, but from sports more generally. Sports Illustrated was caught doing fake stories with AI-generated material. So artificial intelligence-generated material.
And from artificial intelligence-generated people.
Yes.
Did you see that there is actually, I had no idea this existed, but there's an AI headshot marketplace.
Yeah.
And so they were just creating fake authors and writing like funny things like enjoys baking and hiking and spending times in the mountains with this like AI headshot just type of person.
And they got really detailed. I was reading some of them. It was like, it likes to go back to the farm and visit his family. Drew Ortiz out there. Drew Ortiz was very handsome. You know, he had a beard and everything. I was like, I'd swipe whatever direction is yes on that.
Honestly, AI does something with images where like, I'd be like, I'd probably swipe a lot more of those than like the general population.
It is interesting.
It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, a lot is happening with AI right now. And this points out, they got called out on it. They immediately, you know, deleted the posts and things like that.
Well, also interestingly, so it came from a third party. So they outsourced, this is their
claim.
They
said that.
Okay, but it sounds legit. So they have this thing called Advon Commerce, which is like the third party commerce that they outsourced to. And Advon claims that they had writers that like use pseudonames to protect their privacy.
Sure, yeah.
Because when you're saying pseudo headshots too.
10 volleyballs to get started with volleyball, which was an actual article. You want to protect your identity. Yeah. That's a really important thing. Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, I think people are jumping the gun a little bit on AI generated material with writing, but the world ahead is wild. I think right now a lot of writers are clinging on to the idea that it's such anodyne like bullshit at the moment. It's just like kind of scrubbed of any voice that you can kind of tell it. And they call these chum bucket articles
that are just designed
to generate traffic. Huh. So, you know, they're never done for like real articles, but the future is going to be that this is on headlines. This is in like everything you're reading is going to be incorporating this because AI is progressing so fast and it's scary because, you know, Sports Illustrated, most prestigious publication in the world as of like 20 years ago in sports. And now think of where it's devolved to.
Remember the magazines? I was obsessed with Sports Illustrated magazines as a kid. I would like sit there and eat my cereal and like the magazine covers were always so amazing. And it's kind of, it's bonkers to me that like they've gone the way, whether accidentally or intentionally, of AI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have any thoughts on where AI is going? Because like we've been using it a lot more when it comes to our own thoughts. We have ChatGPT-4 open at all times on our computer
to
ask it questions, understand. It's essentially a person that you can talk to.
Well, it's essentially a much, much, much better Google search.
Yeah, but to the point that you can see where it's going after you use it a while. I think basically anyone who's used it enough starts to be like, the world is in a fundamental transformation right now.
Yeah.
And people don't realize it.
Well, also the scary part is like the image and video transformation. So yeah. I use DALL-E a lot, and you can just like write in prompts and it creates an image for you in 3 seconds. But you can also, you can like insert words into people's mouths as they talk. Like you can do, I think it's actually a lot of the like pictures and videos that we see, we have to take a moment and pause and be like, is that real?
And just wait a year.
Yeah.
Let alone 10 years.
Yeah. It's, well, okay. If you could turn AI forces onto UTMB, what would you do?
Oh, I'm trying to think about how that would work. I mean, honestly, I'd just get them to ask, how does this look?
Yeah.
Because I don't know if someone's telling, my theory now is just that no one is telling them, or no one is telling, because like, ChatGPT is actually really good at that. One of the ways I like to use it is be critical of this.
Yes.
So I put the whole ketones article that we talked about last week, the wild science of ketones. I put it all into it and say, give me 10 points of criticism about this article.
Oh, I use it for fact checking all the time.
And it was wonderful because like,
did it give you criticism on like the facts or on like the writing and the style of writing or both?
And it depends on what you ask it and how you frame it.
Did you take any of the,
changed a lot, not for specific facts,
yes,
but I would go and say, okay, this is unclear, or maybe this is scientifically, I'm overstating it for the context of a joke or something. And it just is so good at understanding how things fit together that, using it in the way to give you some constructive criticism can be very helpful. And I'm guessing it works well for PR too.
Well, who's a better editor, myself or AI? I also edit your articles too.
Yeah, you're a better editor, but
AI is probably more thorough.
AI is more brutal. I think sometimes you realize and like, you're just like, it's not worth the fight with David.
AI probably like doesn't put up with the poop jokes. I've learned, I'm like, I'm gonna say this is not great, but he's not gonna accept it. So I'm just gonna let it roll.
The key in any marriage is just beating down the will of your spouse over time with things that you're not going to change anyway.
It's been weird though. It's like beating down the will, but then it's gotten to the point where like, I actually have fallen in love with it.
Yeah.
And that's love over time.
You started to use it too.
I know, right?
That's my favorite thing.
Oh, it's so embarrassing. Yeah. It's like a contagion, a poop joke contagion in this house.
Yeah. It's the old Ted Lasso quote. You think he's mad now? Wait till we've won him over.
Oh my gosh. I've been so influenced.
Okay. So speaking of ketones, some follow-ups from that last week. That article actually did go very viral, even though a lot of people didn't share it, but it got so many clicks apparently.
Especially in the research community, which I thought was great because I think it's a fun conversation for us to have like interactions with researchers and people in the scientific community.
Yeah. So one question you asked me on Patreon this week is, are you going to continue using post-exercise ketones periodically during training ahead? And I'm like, after doing the race, yeah, because I got to the finish and I was not tired. I had so much more in the tank and just didn't want to like bury myself for no reason, but like, I've never felt that way before.
And in fact, 30 minutes post-race, you're like, Megan, should I take ketones? And actually, I told you not to because
I brought some to the race.
Yeah. You were not well-fueled. Like you hadn't fueled very well the last like 4 miles of the race. Yeah. You didn't fuel after the race. And so I was like, let's not do it. Like you might be facing something weird. But had you been fueled, I probably would have said yes.
Yeah. So we have some follow-ups on that. The first is after writing about this online, I got so many ads for ketone companies and they are mostly insufferable. I know people at HVMN listen to this podcast. Guys, look, I think one of the reasons people are so skeptical of ketones sometimes and how they're used is there's just so much bro energy in some of the marketing.
Oh, man.
I had so many guys with like an 8-pack and huge pecs being like, you know how I'm a doctor and work 24 hours a day? It's because of this.
It's because they're exploding champagne all over their bodily orifices.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what you need ketones for.
Maybe. But so I've got a little bit of insufferable marketing, but listen to the podcast last week, read the article to see some of the science behind post-exercise and where we're at. But we also got interview responses from the lead researcher, Chiel Palfe, who does the article that was in the review and things like that. And I wanted to highlight just a few things for listeners that might be interesting.
Are these direct quotes as you're going to read them?
Yeah. Everything I have there is on our outline is a direct quote.
Yep.
But I'm going to summarize a couple of them and then read a couple.
Perfect. Okay.
So the first is they started researching this primarily because in the 1950s, there was evidence that ketone-like substances can have an anti-catabolic effect. And otherwise they prevent the body from breaking down muscle. So very interesting. It kind of might explain some of the recovery benefits there.
Especially too, because most of the theories surrounding using them is preventing overtraining in periods when you're training really hard. And it's like, that makes sense. The body might need a little bit more nudge to avoid catabolic effects when you're doing this type of hard training.
And he also pointed out the Tour de France was a motivator for him in doing this because they had been using it.
It's the ultimate catabolic event too.
Yeah. And you have to recover. Okay, next up is female athletes. We said we were very skeptical. Maybe some of that skepticism was unfounded. Here's a quote direct from him. Most of our studies so far were exclusively performed in male athletes, but we also performed a few studies in females. These generally indicated that the results can be extrapolated to females. In a recent unpublished study, we even observed that some effects are even more pronounced in females.
And I was surprised to see that. I have like many questions about mechanisms, basically for the underlying principle of ketones, but I wonder for female athletes too, if like, you know, I think female athlete physiology, when on the edge, has the ability to crater a lot faster than male athletes. Like there's just not a lot of like hormonal reserve. And I wonder if ketones help provide like slightly more reserve in a period of high training.
And staying away from the edge.
Yes.
Or long-term, maybe they cause major issues with other things we're not thinking
about. Yes. We also like a lot of these studies are not done. Like let's look at athletes in 3 years and see what happens.
None of them exactly. Yeah. This is like the weirdest part of it. It's just a big experiment. Health concerns. He said that there's so far no health concerns. And interestingly, like Megan pointed out last week, they could have clinical implications for other disease processes and things. So pay attention to that field. On banning them, which is something we brought up, just like if all of these benefits are real, maybe there should be talk about that.
Actually, you should read this quote because I should read the whole thing? Yeah, I think the way that this is like pretty nuanced the way they wrote it out, and I think it's well done.
He said, "This is a difficult one. A supplement must comply with at least two of the following criteria to be banned: one, improve performance; two, be a danger to athletes' health; three, not complying with the spirit of sport. So far, there is no indication that they are a danger to athletes' health. In addition, studies have shown divergent effects on performance depending on exercise context and whether you take them before, during, or after exercise." That's what we said. Like a lot of ketone use is probably actually bad for performance, like the before exercise stuff.
And during exercise.
For some of it, for some athletes. So it's where the marketing diverges from the scientific understanding right now. And then back to the quote. "Finally, not complying with the spirit of sport is rather subjective. Currently, they are not banned, and I honestly don't see much of a reason to ban ketones while allowing other ergogenic supplements."
I kind of agree with that take.
Yeah, because, you know, caffeine improves performance way more than ketones do, even with long-term use. And, you know, I don't think anyone's realistically talking about banning coffee.
And much like I imagine ketones too, there's also a range of responses too. Like some people are negative responders to caffeine, while others get this like very nice performance benefit.
Yeah. And so finally on performance, he advises athletes to only do it when everything else is sorted out, when you're basically uncovering the last stone, and only to do it in periods of heavy training. And I agree with that. I think essentially it's an overtraining buffer that might help adaptation, and maybe we'll see about the red blood cell stuff. Like the EPO, natural EPO production could introduce other elements and considerations to think about. But for now, I say only if you're training hard, pushing the limits.
Well, how are you going to use it? Because I love kind of how you think with things. It's like, okay, if one electrolyte tab like works, I'm going to take 12 when I'm cramping, which is kind of what happened at the station.
At mile 33, Dixie Mine, I was coming back down and I had dropped my electrolyte pills, but I had already had all of them.
Wait, you dropped your electrolyte pills again?
Yeah.
So every race, man.
Well, I use a plastic bag and it's hard because sometimes you get to the bottom, you have to like seek around for them, but I don't want to take my eyes off the trail.
Yeah.
And it came out. Actually, you know, Gary, who I was running with at the time, saw me stop for them and just go around on the ground picking them up. And I would like pick up a rock and shouldn't put that in my mouth. And it's like, oh, that's a pill. And I just put like four in my mouth that I could find and then kept running. But when I got back to the aid station, they had the goo packets and each one comes with four Roctane capsules. And so I open them, take a scary number. Let's just say it wasn't in the single digits all at once. And I just looked up at the aid station volunteers who were amazing. It was just like, you didn't see anything. Don't tell anyone about this. So do as I say, not as I do. But I was desperate at the time.
That's a little scary. But I can see in your mind of like, okay, if one electrolyte tab works, 15 might work too. But same with ketones. Like, how are you going to regulate that in your own training? Like you've clearly had this benefit. Are you going to stop using it for the next couple of weeks ahead as you recover from the race? Like, how are you going to structure that?
I think I'm still going to continue one or two times a week after
indefinitely
exercise.
Or
for now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know,
Even though like the research says to like periodize it.
Well, the research doesn't say that.
Yeah.
The research doesn't say anything.
That's true.
No one knows.
Well, it seems like they're saying to periodize it because
the researcher is saying that.
Yes.
His research is not.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the complicated thing is like, I think that there's a lot of incentives moving around in every different direction now. Like we're incentivized, for example, to have a discount code for HVMN here.
Which and we're not.
We decided not to do that. Or any company like that, because we want to be honest about this in our understandings of it.
And we also just don't know the long-term effects. Like it would be horrible to have a discount code for ketones and then in 4 years be like, oh, it causes these like major health issues.
That's what I mean. Yeah. We want to have the misgivings to be like, look, when I say I'm taking ketones, I'm kind of doing an experiment on myself.
Yeah.
And that's scary.
You're a sexy guinea pig.
Am I?
Yeah, you are.
I'm a guinea pig in a thong.
Oh, yeah.
Just imagine that. Looking back over my shoulder doing like an Instagram pose that's going to get me so many likes.
Doing the thong song. I'm sure I could plug that into Dolly and be like, give me a guinea pig in a thong.
Oh, my God. I got this guinea pig dumps like a truck, truck, truck. It's so good. So stay tuned. We'll keep you updated. But speaking of something we are 1,000% confident in, because all of these ingredients have been tested long term, AG1, Athletic Greens. We got this email. I've joined the cult. Yes, unfortunately, I feel amazing. I had to continue the cycle of AG1 is brilliant emails. Thank you for the enthusiasm. It took me a long time to get on board. I used your link, of course, and I'm getting my partner to do the same as I type. So drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. There's so much of this. We keep bringing it in every week, partially because we know it's going to make you feel better. I took it race morning. First thing I did when I woke up at 4:30 a.m. was I put it into a little cup, tried to mix it as well as I could because we didn't have our frother.
You almost tried to take the frother through the airport security.
Yeah.
And why'd you bail?
Well, because the frother's so important to me. Yeah. I didn't want to risk it. And I just feel so good and even energied and just wonderful when I run. My heart rate's better. Clearly, based on my race performance, it's good for that. So, you know, it's one of those things that I almost wish it wasn't so good, but it's just amazing. And it's so healthy and totally recommend it.
Well, I feel good after it. Like, there's no caffeine in it, but we traveled on Sunday and then I came home and did a 90-minute elliptical and it was daunting to think about doing that. We have this like beanbag chair downstairs and I feel like the inertia of the beanbag chair is once you sit in there, it takes at least 10 minutes to get out of there. But Athletic Greens pre-workout, even after travel, like before a long elliptical, I feel like it has some sort of like energizing properties in it and it helps me a ton.
So you're saying guinea pig with a thong with an Athletic Greens mustache.
Oh yeah. I can't avoid the mustache. Can you? I mean, I've tried. I mean, maybe if you drink through a straw.
Yeah. Or I don't know. Depends which orifice you put it in.
That's true.
Actually did ask at the aid station as well. You could tell I had a lot of caffeine because I was like trying out my best material on the podcast or the, you know, not podcast listeners, the aid station volunteers. At one point I was like, do you have these in suppository form?
The electrolyte tabs. Yeah.
Okay. Next up, Graham Blank's training to win the NCAA championships. They talked about this on Let's Run, actually, and on their podcast. And I want to give a quick summary because it's interesting. 100 miles a week on 6 days with only one double. So in other words, he's doing a lot of longer singles of like 15 or 16 miles. But very interestingly, almost all of his runs are pretty quick, around 6 minute pace, even for his easy training, which when you're a 13:03 5K-er, which he just ran after winning the NCAA championships, that's not hard for you. You're zone two in that, in a five zone model.
Well, it's not hard on a cellular level. Like the body is not seeing that in terms of like this large stretch, but I do think you could argue that it could be hard on a biomechanical level. Yeah. And what I found curious too is a lot of the Harvard team was doing the same thing. And Graham Blank seems like an outlier. Like he's one of those people that just has like insane talent.
Yeah.
But I wonder what's happening at Harvard. It's like throwing a bunch of eggs at the wall and Graham Blank sticks, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of athletes are like that at the NCAA level. The teams run so fast in general with each other.
Do you think there's something, I mean, I think a lot of times it ruins athletes and it ruins long-term progression in careers, but they're young athletes in a time in which like they're developing. Do you think there's something to it because a lot of teams are coalescing on it?
100,000%. And that's why I wanted to talk about this because, you know, we're the ultimate proponents of easy running on here and you should be too, probably.
Especially if you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yes.
Yes.
All of us have experiences that have run when we're younger. It's a different context because you're just gathering so much aerobic development at that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when Harvard goes out there, NCAA team for men, and they're running 6 minute pace on their easy day, some of the most advanced athletes like Graham Blanks are in zone two in a five zone model. This is actually easy training for them, even though it's fast. And yeah, it has some mechanical issues with it, maybe long-term. And when he's 28, he's not going to be doing that. But right now, the best aerobic training you can do is high end zone two.
That's kind of how I trained as a college athlete.
It's Nigo Samalon in cycling. Mm-hmm. They do this on the bike too. There's a reason. High zone two training is awesome. The problem is some of these athletes are not in high zone two. They're in zone three into zone four, especially the less developed athletes. And so what can happen with those is that some of them are going to adapt through it and it's going to become their zone two, in which case they're just getting a fuck ton of amazing zone two work that adds a lot of aerobic development and they're going to be amazing. Other athletes never get there, whether due to muscle fiber typology, their background, whatever, and they're going to be burnt to a crisp.
Well, they're going to be egg smashed against the wall.
And they're never going to progress in college, and they're going to get injured, and they're going to burn out. And that's the story of most college progressions, right? Like, if you follow this sport long enough, the people that come out the other end, it's a very narrow funnel.
Exactly. Yes.
And so, you know, if you're in a narrow, and then that funnel gets more and more and more narrow to the point that by 28, no one does that really, mm-hmm. unless they're doping. Like the only stories of people doing that later on, for the most part, are athletes that are in doping programs. And I don't want to say names, but Keelan Rupp and like the Oregon Project. Yes, like, yeah. It's a different story.
That was a nice cough, by the way.
Yeah.
Was it a cough or a sneeze?
It's racer's cough.
From an excretion?
The 50 miler. Yeah. Sometimes I just need to keep coughing after the race. So I think the lesson here for advanced athletes is maybe don't do this all the time, but steady running at the top end of zone two into zone three is a very important skill.
Especially as a new runner, especially as a young runner, and especially if you're not injury prone.
And then even when you're advanced, you know, if your workouts aren't incredibly hard, like if you're not going to the well, you can introduce a lot more of this type of thing. And so it's where the art intersects with the science of easy running to become something that's not go as easy as you can all the time. It's like go very easy most of the time, but sometimes when you feel good, easy should be faster. And the exact proportion is so individual dependent that it's tough to know.
Well, I love the stirring of the art and the science, and then just unfortunately smashing a bunch of eggs against the wall, which is not our training philosophy.
No, not at all.
Yes, yeah.
But it can work. And you know,
but now, you can learn something from it.
But now at 35, for example, in that 50 miler, so much in that race, I am falling back on my steady running, mm-hmm. right? So Graham Blanks, it's actually very interesting. Like, I bet he could go from this training right after running that 1303 5K and destroy a long ultra, because 6 minute pace is nothing for him.
Oh yeah. He's just jogging.
And similarly, like for all of us, being comfortable with steady running is good, even if it's not the focus of your training, and you need to keep it in context and remember it's usually a workout and shouldn't be on top of two workouts a week. You can probably do one workout a week in steady running, but not two.
Well, there's a lot of NCAA training insight too that's coming out right now, because both Graham Blanks and Parker Valby went on to do 5Ks at the BU track this weekend. Yeah. And they ran fast. Graham Blanks was 13:03. Parker Valby, 14:56.
First collegiate ever under 15 minutes in 5K.
So fast indoors. And she has kind of an unconventional training style as well, where she's doing these 2 to 3 days of running and then the rest cross training. But she had a great quote in CityUS magazine, and she was like, you guys, I am training so hard on the elliptical. Like, she is leaving puddles of sweat. She described having to have like a sign that says like wet floor surrounding all of her cross training tools. And I think she also changes the paradigm of how we think about like training intensity distribution in young athletes when you mix cross training in.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's kind of cool to see all this like NCAA training theory coming out.
Who does that remind you of? The wet floor.
Oh, that was me.
That was you.
Yes.
When I met you, holy shit. You wet that floor down so hard.
Oh, so that was before I knew about fans, dude.
Yeah.
Now there's like fans in like every direction on me, and my sweat is just like.
But you also don't go as hard as you used to.
That's true. I'm much smarter with my cross-training.
And you have to be with your autoimmune condition.
Actually, in Italy, I studied abroad one summer, and they gave me a mop every time I passed, and they made me clean up my own sweat. It was very European. They're like, deal with this bitch.
That's amazing. Yeah. And, you know, I think I got tagged a lot in the Parker Valby thing.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people understand just how hard you can go cross training.
Oh, so hard.
If you're doing it, especially when you're young like this. I saw it in Megan when I first met you, and we kind of knew that this was what her cross training had to be. But similar to Graham Blanks, that is the type of thing that you have a little bit more leeway with cross training. You can push just kind of a lot more, mm-hmm. but you still need to be careful with as you age.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say, I think 20s or the young 20s, and sometimes even like some 19, 18, it's a magical time.
Yeah.
You can do a lot to your body.
Yeah.
I mean, evidence in the fact that like I could drink a lot as a college freshman, and now I have 3 sips of a drink and I'm like, what's wrong with
me? Then you need to have 4 servings of AG1 immediately. Yeah. So lots more interesting stuff to come from there. Okay, maybe last news and fun things thing is a quick primer on some of the shoes at the running event. We got this from the great Instagram follow, Road Trail Run. They were doing pictures and things of shoes. So we haven't tried on any of these shoes, but wanted to highlight some of the sexy options that may be available soon.
It was fun to scroll through all the pictures. It's like shoe porn, essentially, scrolling through them. Okay, can we start first with the Tecton X3?
Yes.
This has Puba foam and an integrated gaiter, and was what Jim Walmsley was wearing at UTMB.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting looking shoe.
Yeah.
It looks fast.
So the Puba foam is softer.
Yes.
That's my concern with the Tecton at McDowell. I wasn't going to wear it, the X2, the carbon shoe. But it's just firm. It's too firm.
Yeah.
For that type of distance. Yes, you can do it if you're a very efficient runner. I am not.
Yeah.
I run like a hippo. So I need hippo shoes. And Puba is the hippo foam. Yeah. So Puba is the hippo foam. So I think the Tecton X3 might be game changing I don't think it comes out till mid-year next year, but let's keep an eye on it. We'll try to get our hands on an early pair and let you know.
Okay, here's a hot take. Integrated gaiters make me feel slow, but this one does not. It looks, maybe it's because I have the bias of like Jim Walmsley wearing it, but it looks slow to me.
So a gaiter, for those that don't know, is the part of the, it's like something that goes over the top of your shoe so you don't get sand that goes down the heel.
Yeah.
I think that's the rationale for it.
I think it's the rationale. Maybe it helps in some sense with like proprioception and ankle spraining.
Yeah.
That would be my hope.
You know what I'm going to do when I get that shoe? What? Scissors. I don't get it.
But I don't know if that's, I mean, you're probably like altering the biomechanics of how the shoe works.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Thing looks just like a piece of cloth. Yeah. Like someone put a paper towel over top of my favorite shoe.
Okay, here's my other hot take. Uh-huh. It kind of looks like Hoka, like the design and the colorways. They're going back to like Skechers of the 90s.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
It's interesting. I think it must be, you know, Hoka has incredible designers.
Oh, yes. Yeah, incredible. So, and also their shoes are like next level. But
and they make a ton of money.
Yeah, but they're doing something with their design scheme that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you see me? Yeah, do you affirm
me? I do see you. Yes. I do affirm
you. I want to uplift all Hoka, but it's curious.
They're starting to look a little bit like the shoes that I was wearing that had like Velcro and light ups on the side.
I was gonna say, it's kind of like dad boy shoes fucked like 4-year-old light up shoes.
I don't like the analogy.
You don't agree with that.
I like the principle of it. I like where you're going. We should workshop that with AI. Yes. We should ask it, what is problematic about this joke?
Okay. Even think about that.
Answer is no.
I'm talking about shoes, David.
And I understand, but we're going to ask that, but we're going to leave it in the podcast because it's very funny. Okay, next up from Hoka, the Mach X 2. I am a huge fan of the Mach X. If you haven't tried the Mach X, wonderful training shoe. It's looking space age, has like multiple compartments where you can capture rocks now, but I'm excited for that shoe because I've loved the Mach X.
Yeah, they increased the rocker on it, which is maybe what you're talking about, like the ability to handle a rock collection.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you run in like these road shoes, I come back and there's like 6 heart rocks in this shoe. There's like rocks everywhere. Yeah, why does that happen?
I don't know, but the Mach X, if that became a trail shoe, it would be a great trail shoe.
Well, you wanted to wear the Mach X for McDowell 50, and I'm so glad you didn't.
Oh man, I would have gone so much faster.
You would have wrecked ankles everywhere.
But it's a great shoe. Try the Mach X for your road running if you like that type of shoe. Next up, the Speedgoat 6 is looking a lot more like the Speedgoat Evo.
Okay, they've said that for every single iteration of the Speedgoat, and it's never like the Evo.
It's so weird. So for the listeners that don't know, there was a shoe called the Speedgoat Evo. It came out, and it was like heaven on your feet. It's called a Speedgoat, but it's not. It's just a totally different thing. That is like,
it's responsive, it's plush, it's soft, it handles technical terrain. It's honestly, it feels lighter. I think it is lighter than the Speedgoat.
Yeah,
and
by a ton.
By a ton, yeah.
I actually put it on the scale and it's 1.4 ounces per shoe lighter than the Ultrafly. That's how good the Evo is.
Yes, yeah.
Because I still have a beat up pair that has like 1,000 miles on it.
Maybe also, they last forever too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this was like an orgasm became a shoe. And maybe this Speedgoat 6 will be a little bit closer. It's lighter. I just don't think
they're promising fake orgasms. It's not going to be the Speedgoat Evo. Yeah, they're faking it. They're moaning when it's not really happening.
Perfect. Okay, right from there. Then lots of super shoes are coming out. One thing I thought was interesting is that a lot of the super shoes are starting to look similar, not trail, road here, where they kind of have two compartments. Mm-hmm. One, the toe box compartment, which kind of curls up into the heel, and then a heel compartment, much like the Alpha Fly initially did, the Nike Alpha Fly. I think that's very cool because once we start to see convergent evolution, mm-hmm. we're probably seeing something that is optimizing at least the current state of shoe technology.
And everyone and their mom has a super shoe at this point. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's companies of like shoe companies that I've never even heard of that are like
361?
Yeah, they're that's like, a shoe? Look at why 361?
That was an actual shoe company.
I know, but like, why did they choose that number?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's 1 degree greater than
a full circle.
Full circle.
Yeah.
So they're like, we didn't just end where we started. Yes. We went a little bit farther, but we went a little bit too long to get there.
We're ultra running overachievers.
Okay. The next up actually on that note is the Alphafly 3 is about to come out.
Oh, it looks sexy. That's a good shoe.
And it's been worn for a lot of the world records recently. If you're looking to get a super shoe, but you're like, don't need it quite yet, I would wait for that. I think it's going to be January. Get it on the first drop. I hear the Alphafly 3 is insane.
Well, we've also seen really strong performance still from the Vaporfly.
Yeah. It's good. It's a great shoe. I do think.
Do you think it handles hills better than the Alphafly?
I don't actually think so. No.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure exactly. I'm not.
It has slightly more tread.
Yeah. But the new Alphafly has dropped 15% of its weight, which is insane because it's so much support. Next up, Adidas Trail. All of their shoes are looking fine as hell.
Oh, they look great.
Yeah.
They look awesome. And they have got like tons of variations. They have the Agravec. Is it the Agravec Speed Ultra that has the carbon plate in it?
Yes.
That looks great.
That's what Tom Evans has been wearing. A lot of their athletes have been wearing at the level. Can't wait to see that shoe. Again, why are athletes allowed to wear prototypes in races? Don't think that should be a thing, but it's going to be available to the masses soon. Very excited for that. And then finally, Salomon's coming out with a shoe called the Genesis.
Oh, it's already out.
It's already out?
Yes, my athletes love it. I have a number of athletes that wear it.
And they're not just Salomon sponsored?
No, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Well, yeah. It has a matrix upper, which is the same as the Speedgoat Evo, the same upper, which was delightful. I don't know, understand why other shoes don't, maybe because it's expensive, maybe because shoe companies are lazy and they don't understand what we love.
But it's great on technical terrain. So I've had a ton of athletes wear it for like very technical sorts of races, and I've seen it excel. They're comfortable in it. So
yeah. Okay, man, Megan, we've had so much fun today. We have like 8 million other topics. I have 6 studies on this. We have 5 other questions.
We have like 15 hot takes. Basically, actually, that shoe discussion was all a hot take.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I feel like the thing about shoes is like, please disagree with us.
Yeah.
We have opinions and we have feet, and that varies across the population.
Except on hamsters or guinea pigs and thongs.
That's true. Yeah. Please agree
with
us on that.
They got dumps like a truck. Okay. Anything you want to talk about before hot takes?
Yes. One thing, okay. Actually. So I've been a part of this thing called the Coaches Collective. It's led by Laura Pence, who's a psychologist, and they have new openings for a cohort coming up in January. So that's soon.
Yeah.
So do it fast. Hill stride there. Don't run there. Don't jog there.
Coaches Collective.
Coaches Collective. So basically, it's this group of coaches who come together and you share stories, and there's like lessons and set structure, but you think about things like mindset and belief and even things like business practices, and you bring your own case studies and stories there. And I don't know, sometimes I feel like we have each other in this coaching process, but I don't get to interact with a lot of other coaches, and it's fun to do it in that collective.
For coaches out there or people that are very coaching curious, trying to coach, Coaches Collective seems like a great option.
Also, like coaching, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of different types of coaching. It's open to like RDs, mental health coaches. So like broad range of coaching, and check it out.
So are you sponsored?
No, I'm
not. Okay, okay.
I just like it.
And you love Dr. Laura Pence. She's incredible. Yeah. Follow Dr. Laura Pence. I think she's basically the mental coach to the stars, the therapist, psychologist to the stars. She's incredible.
Also, important point, stars have therapists.
Yes.
Yes. I feel like that's not, like, oftentimes people are like, I thank my coach, but it's like, you should also really thank your therapist too. That's
the reason I couldn't be a therapist, because my ego is like, I need that Instagram story.
Where's my Instagram story?
Whereas no one's like, hey, my therapist made this possible, but the therapists do make it possible.
Behind the scenes, I'm like, it's maybe like 10% me and 90% Dr. Laura for athletes I've sent. So it makes a big difference. But we'll link the Coaches Collective in the show notes too.
Yes, I love it. Okay, on to hot takes. Let's just do one of these or two of these because we're going pretty long today. First up, Strava segment rankings need to be broken down by wind speed and direction, especially for cycling segments.
Yeah, I agree. And for drafting in a group of like 95 people, which happens all the time here in Boulder. They have a Wednesday ride of like 100 people and they go so fast.
Yeah, segments in general or anything like this, like course records even, you know, things play different all the time.
Oh, yeah. Even in running.
You know, I think segments and records and all that are really motivating, especially if you're going against yourself or something. But remember, there's a lot more noise than signal sometimes. And just take it all with a grain of salt and don't judge yourself too much based on that.
Also, there's a huge difference between going hard and going relatively harder. Like for me, the difference between going hard on a 30-minute tempo and going relatively harder might be two minutes.
Yeah.
And so don't judge yourself on like random long runs and other things against your own segments.
Speaking of going hard, guess what Strava did today?
Oh, they got messages.
They released messages.
They're going hard. Yeah.
They're going people are going to be going very hard into the paint on that app now.
Are you going to use it?
Am I going to use messages?
Actually, maybe for recruiting athletes.
Yeah, I know.
You're like, hey, your run looks great. This is signed my wife, Megan, and I, so it's not creepy.
Exactly. Yeah. We can group message.
Yeah.
Be the awkward couple just being like, Do
you want to join?
Do you
want to hang with us?
We have crop tops. Next up. Health metrics on Garmin watches are worse than just listening to your body. This includes sleep score, performance readiness, and condition, body battery, stress level, and more.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think there's use for data metrics, and I think there's use for not using it. But I will say this. I recently turned off my stress and sleep and heart rate metrics on Garmin, and I feel a lot better.
Yeah.
I was checking it. So they have like very granular details of like your stress throughout the day. Like every 10 minutes you get a bar that's like, are you stressed? Are you not? And it was driving me nuts, and I turned it off.
Okay, well, this goes full circle.
Yeah, it's like me checking CIM. Marathon, exactly. Being like, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
But this is also what makes me like, I could do a stage race and like every 0.1 miles, I'd be like, yes.
You can stay so focused. Yes. Whereas I don't look at these for a while. Let's actually look at my watch right now to see what my numbers are. My stress a little higher on the podcast, interestingly.
Yeah, mine was always higher on the podcast, and then I would get sad.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
like, there's no reason to be sad. Like, if that is you, turn it off.
Yeah, I think it's interesting stuff. Like, for me, going to sea level before the race, my heart rate dropped, my stress went down. It's very interesting to think about the background stress you're under. But contextualize any of this stuff if it's helpful to you or not. If your watch ever makes you feel bad about yourself or stressed extra, take it off. Like, it's just not helpful. That goes with activity trackers too, like Whoop or Oura or anything like that. Make sure it's serving you. And if it's not, get rid of it because it's not helping you enough to justify anxiety.
Okay, interestingly, totally unsponsored, I have an Oura ring right now. And for whatever reason, the data visualization on Oura ring stresses me out a lot less than any other like Garmin or Whoop. Like the way that it presents it and explains it, I feel good about.
Does it tell you that it likes you? Is it giving you positive reinforcement?
It gives you positive reinforcement, even if like your resting heart rate goes up 5 beats.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
so it's a watch sycophant.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, but I feel like we would love to design a training watch that's like, you rock.
Yeah, yeah.
You're great. And then give some like, you know, little sandwich criticism every once in a while. But
I love sycophants when it comes to watches. I do not like them when it comes to media.
That's true.
Yes, what we're trying to say. Yeah. All right. On to Listener Corner. I actually wanted to read this one, which is a question that we were going to get to earlier, but it's too good to leave out.
I like it as Listener Corner. Let's do it.
The last time I emailed, I was about to start law school and I was worried that I would be too busy to run. My last day of fall classes was yesterday and I am now frantically outlining, but I have loved law school so far. While I didn't run as much as I wanted this semester, I did run more than I expected, including races that they did that I don't want to name. I'm writing because I have a somewhat silly question. How should I fuel during my exams? They're all about 4 hours long, and I remember reading that glycogen can sustain brain function. But precision nutrition seems like a bit much for a non-exercise activity. Plus, I might look a bit silly taking a gel during my Civ Pro final. So, civil procedure final. I tried to look this up, but most articles seem to think or to be about what I should eat before a test, not during. I'm probably overthinking this. Yeah, but this seemed like a question you would have fun with. It's okay if you have no clue. This is mostly just for fun. Thanks for all the joy and encouragement.
Okay, they are definitely not overthinking this.
Food doping.
Food doping is a thing for the brain.
That's the best.
Actually, the brain metabolism is quite high.
Yeah.
And it goes up during test taking.
I get starving by the end of these podcasts.
Okay, and I have taken so many damn tests during my career. And I should be done with tests, thank the Lord.
How many tests do you think you've taken?
Oh my God, hundreds.
Yeah, probably thousands.
Maybe thousands. Yeah, actually, tens if you count back to like elementary school. And food doping helps a ton. And I have totally been that person that's there like sipping a gel.
Yeah.
And do it. Take caffeinated ones.
I love... Wait. I was moving on to a slightly different topic on this, but I need to touch base on what you just said. You're saying that they should take caffeinated gels during their law school test?
100%. And we need to do a randomized controlled trial and compare that to like not... They're going to do so much better and they're going to be happier.
But why gel? They're not having any like demand on their...
Because the brain is demand.
Yeah, but there's bars.
Okay, also I treat tests like I treat races.
Yeah.
I want to feel the same way.
But why not like a really tasty energy bar?
Because you don't have time for that shit.
A Cliff Builders bar.
You don't have time to chew and think.
No, none of that.
No.
This is the difference between Megan and I. I'd be like, ooh, I get to eat something really nice. I get to eat a sandwich right now. Megan's like, no, this is
must focus.
Hydrogel. Yes. I need precision for 400 calories an hour.
I must slurp in 1 second. I can't take 12 seconds to chew.
Okay, so my suggestion would be a Gatorade Endurance protein bar.
Oh, those are gross.
They're so tasty.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I had them during my first trimester pregnancy, so I'm biased. But.
Okay, some bar you love. Have it out on your test-taking desk, whether you're taking a law school exam, any test, the bar exam, whatever. Don't do it as distraction, but you know, when you start to be a little hungry, eat it while you're reading so that, you know, you feel like you're being productive. You're going to digest it just as fast. I don't think you need to do gels during tests, though... I'm kind of shocked you disagree with that.
And I'm actually giving you like laser eyes right now.
Yeah, I know.
I've taken probably 6 times more tests than you have. And I still stand behind slurping the caffeinated goop.
That's
slurp,
so wild to me.
Slurp away.
But
get those brain powers.
The principles of this question I do love.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
You know, food doping is not just a question of racing or anything like that. It's a question of bringing out the best in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, your brain is the ultimate energy user in your body.
Yes.
It's where, even during running, it's where a lot of your energy is going. So support and uplift your brain.
Yes.
Give it what it needs.
Yeah. And then go for a run after the test, because do you know how good you're going to feel with all that goop in your body?
Oh my God. We differ so much on test taking.
I know. Well, do you know, it feels great because sometimes it's like I have anxiety about particular questions. Still to this day, I'll like wake up and be like, what did I do? Was it answer C? Was it answer D? And when you go for a run, it kind of all slips away.
Okay. Do you remember what it was when you were at med school. So you went to Stanford.
Yes. The interview process. We were talking about the same thing. Yes.
At Stanford Medical School. And all I remember is that you get out to the car and you started crying immediately because of one thing. And what was it? I don't remember.
Okay. So in the interview process, they do MME, which is like multiple mini interviews.
Oh, so they used to.
Yes, they used to. So you do like 10 of these and they like ask you different questions and you have to respond. It's much like a podcast, actually. Yeah. I'd be much better at it now than I was then. But they ask you like some questions about chickens and like whether it's more sustainable to like have a chicken or something. But I totally forgot to account for the fact that chickens lay eggs. I just assumed you're going to eat them all. And I was like, what's wrong with me? They're not going to let me in.
I wish we had that for the podcast recording, your actual response.
Oh my God. It was, and actually, I mean, I think it was okay. I think I made it okay. But
well,
I was
you
like,
got into Stanford.
I convinced myself that like, I didn't know that chickens lay eggs. Actually, do chickens lay eggs? Is it just roosters? I don't know.
Roosters are men, right?
I have.
Hens are women.
Okay, clearly.
They're all chickens.
I don't know. I don't know chicken taxonomy.
Oh, no. Did I bring up anxiety?
I only know human physiology. Yeah. And this to this day, I haven't been able to Google it because I'm like, I don't even want to look.
There would be months later before you found out about getting into Stanford Medical School where you'd wake up at 1 a.m. and I just hear you go, oh, and I'd
chickens.
Like, David's restaurant. Chickens.
The worst. Also, I think we've told this story on the podcast before, but here it is again.
It's worth it. Yeah. It's so worth it. Oh, I love you, Megan.
I love you. And we love you.
Turkeys out there that are just trying to get by.
And the chickens too, whether you lay eggs or not, you're enough.
Yeah. And you don't have to eat chickens either.
Yeah.
We love you all.
Just eat protein powder.
Huzzah.
Bye.